Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I continue walking down memory lane by inviting back my favorite guests, and I am joined today by repeat guest Helene Wecker. Helene, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Scott.
I'm excited to talk to you about Star Trek. Before we jump into that, though, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I'm Helene Wecker. I'm a writer. I've written one book and most of a second book. The book was called The Golem and the Genie. It came out 2013. The next book is called The Iron Season, and it's coming out in 2000 and something something. And it's sort of like, it feels sort of like a dissertation. I'm always about 18 months out from finishing. Mm-hmm. So, or at least from publishing. So, anyway, that's basically me. And every once in a while I hang out with my friends over in the Incomparable Network and watch some silly TV and make a podcast.
So I'm going to ask you a question that, you may not want to answer, but I wonder, since I have no, notoriety or interest, people don't ask me to produce anything, but I do know that authors who have had a popular book and then take their time writing a follow-up book sometimes get some people who are very eager for the second book and are like, why are you not writing your book 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? How dare you have a life other than writing this book that I'm waiting for? Do you have to deal with that at all?
Yes, I really do. And which is, I know, a huge privilege, that I, you know, that the first book, you know, did relatively well and people read it. And now, you know, people are waiting for the second book, and I am also waiting for the second book. My family is waiting for the second book. My family is waiting for me to finish the second book.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And it becomes sort of difficult to, you know, to say, you know, how many times can I say I'm still working on it? I'm really sorry. It makes me like hide on social media. I've basically given up a lot of social media because otherwise it's just me apologizing all the time. But yeah, my writing process seems to be really slow and Byzantine, and having two kids under the age of 8 doesn't help, certainly. And the problem I've kind of run into is that if, you know, it used to be I could drive myself crazy working and I could work myself into the ground for a certain amount of time. And really the only person I was hurting was me. Mm-hmm. And that isn't true anymore. Mm-hmm. So the, you know, it's, I've got a family that, you know, when mommy ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And, you know, I'm also 43 years old and I can't be up till 4 a.m. regularly anymore. So all of which sounds, you know, a whole lot like tiny violins, but, I'm doing my best to let know out there that I am doing my best, and it's coming, and I think I'm actually going to be pretty proud of it. So there it is.
Well, that's, and I never really under, well, I understand, part of me understands how people are so excited to read another book that they can't understand how it's not here already. Mm-hmm. And as a reader of many books, including your book, I understand that as well. But then I think about how, you know, how short a time it takes me to read a book versus how long it takes to produce said book. And I think, well, you know, there, that math doesn't add up. So I can read much faster than you can write.
yeah.
Is what I'm saying. I do often wonder, not that, so I, at my job, I do a lot of writing, so which means I sit at my desk and sometimes just stare into space. And I worry that people who, and I work in an office, so I worry as people pass by, they think I'm just goofing off, when in fact, I'm just pondering how I'm going to write this email about fishing and make it interesting to people, even though I know no one's going to read it.
And that's it. I mean, like 75% of the creative process for me is like staring into random cabinets and my refrigerator and walking around the house and folding laundry. And, you know, it just because so much of it happens in the back of the brain. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to speed that up. It took me a long time to figure out that I could not productivity myself into finishing this book more quickly because it just doesn't work that way as much as I want it to. The rest of my life, I am completely all about organization and streamlining and that thing that happens when you have kids and it's all about triage and what's about to explode and how do I stop it from exploding before it explodes. And that does not translate to the writing process. So it's very... it's a little bit of a schizophrenic life, but it's also, you know, it's done right by me so far. I'm just a ball of nervous energy all the time, but I think I would be that anyway, no matter what I was. So
well, there you go. So we watched an episode from TNG called When the Bow Breaks, which I had very little memory of.
I had about the same amount of memory, and I think it might have, I couldn't figure out how much of my memory was of the episode itself and how much was just sort of the glossy, strange glow of first season Next Generation when none of the characters feel quite right and everyone seems to be talking in a very strange and affected gait. But so it just had that first season feel to it, but I do think I remember the seeing it the first time.
So this is the previous episode of Random Trek. I discussed a first season original series episode, which episode it was. Now I'm completely blanking. We recorded this yesterday, not when you're listening to this, folks, but when in my timeline. This is like a time that I recorded this yesterday, but I cannot remember the day. Oh, Operation Annihilate was our previous Random Trek episode, the one where we find out Captain Kirk has a brother, and no, he's dead because giant amoebas are basically infecting the planet. It's a really good episode, but it made me it reminded me once again that the first season of the original series is fantastic. The first season of the Next Generation, not so much. But you were going to say something about the first season of the original series.
No, I've seen. I mean, all the episodes of the original series that I've seen, I think I saw before the age of like 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember much of them. And I don't remember that one. I need to go back and watch this.
Oh, you should. I mean, if you're interested, the first season of the original series is well worth revisiting. It's just got so many kind of iconic Star Trek moments in it. And it is, I posit, the reason why all the rest of Star Trek exists, because that first season's so good. Second and third seasons are fine of the original series. Don't send me emails, please. but that first season, fantastic. And you cannot say the same for the original series, for the Next Generation, I should say. So much so that I am surprised that there was a second season of the Next Generation.
Funny enough, my husband said the exact same thing last night while we were watching this. and it's sort of become a tradition that if I do a Random Trek or if I'm watching like a TV show for another podcast, he watches it with me now. Mm-hmm. And so it's my comments on the episode will also at times be sprinkled with his comments that I will either attribute to him or not.
Just take the credit.
Yes, exactly. For all the good jokes, I will steal them. It may be 50% of them because that's California law. I'm entitled 50% of my husband's one-liners. He said the same thing. It was like, wow, they really went for a second season for this. And what I come down to, I think, is that we just expected different things from television back then. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I can think of, because I look at this, I mean, I was 12, 13 years old when, the season came out, and my tastes were not then what they are now, et cetera, et cetera. This is always the problem when you go back and look at something that's more than, say, 8 or 10 years old. And I think I remember having this problem with the episode of Voyager that I watched too, even mm-hmm. though that, was much more recent than this, at least, on average. But I don't know what they were doing with this episode. And maybe you could just go, do your thing. We'll walk through it and I will I will sort of slap my forehead every once in a while. And I do promise to make comments about things that I liked as well.
Well,
it's not just
fine.
Me ragging on it.
Well, this is an interesting episode. It did remind me very much of an original series episode because there is a lot of kind of standing around, a lot of people just talking about stuff, and a central computer that runs the life of a civilization, which is all key ingredients of an original series episode.
Yes. Everyone really does just stand around and talk and make faces at each other and meaningful glances. And there are these, it felt almost like... like kabuki in a way, that these small conversations or these one lines felt so much like shorthand for larger ideas, just because they were eliding so much. It was almost like a myth being told very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That once you look beyond, once you start to question anything about what's going on, it either falls apart or it descends into madness.
Which is because my favorite Star Trek.
Yes, the implications are that everyone is horrible. These are all horrible people.
They are.
Including the people on the Enterprise. And why would you do this? Why would you have your kids out in space? Why would you... I think I've talked to you about this before, mm-hmm. and also I think I've commented before other places as well. Oh, I think when we did the episode in The Main Incomparable about the first and last episodes of Next Generation, the idea that there would be kids on the Enterprise, I really wonder why they did that, why they had that in the show at all to begin with, because once it's another one of these things where once you scratch the surface, the questions are unanswerable. And it just throws this moral light of horror onto who would do this. And so you have to sort of decide that they're not real people, but what does that mean? You know, and mm-hmm. and again, it's like these are archetypes. These are. It sort of throws them into this realm of, if you're not a real person, what are you? You're an idea of a person. And I when I start to think about it, it takes me down some really weird places to sort of posit a Beverly Crusher who would bring her son into space, or any of these parents who would bring their kids into, you know, let's go exploring and, you know, risk death every week. And, oh, but you also have to learn calculus.
Yes. When you're like 6 years old or something like that.
Yes. Because it's funny. So.
Yeah. And I think the scene that encapsulated that for me is when the parents of the kidnapped children, oh, and by the way, there will, of course, as always, be spoilers for this episode on this podcast. gather in the ready room with Captain Picard, and they're like, "Hey, Captain Picard, rightfully so, how are you going to, you know, fix this problem? You're the captain. You're in charge." And there's one woman in particular who is quite upset, which Beverly Crusher's like, "Sit down, Janet," or whatever her name is. I don't know if her name was Janet. And then she says, "We all knew the risks when we brought our kids aboard.
Yes.
You have no right to complain." And I was like, what?
Yes, exactly. Now, we all knew the risk when we signed on, and that's the choice you made. And I just sort of sat bolt upright, and so did Kareem, and we went, whoa! the thing is, it's exactly correct.
It's true.
It's exactly correct. It is true. Those are the risks when they signed on, and those are the choices you made. And therefore, these are horrible, terrible, awful people, except only in this particular one dimension, very narrow, involving children.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it all just sort of falls apart. And
it's
and
strange.
Is a very oddly lopsided sort of composition of human that would be as moral and upright as they are and then bring their kids into space. I just don't get it.
And I wonder why the writers chose to have Beverly Crusher say that. I feel like Captain Picard could say that, because he is not impacted by it. And he's kind of, you know, kind of a stickler for the rules, but he doesn't say it. He is the one that's like, I understand you're all upset. We'll figure this out. I can't make any promises, but we'll try our best. And Beverly Crusher's like, well, you know, we know what we signed up for. It's fine. I don't really like Wes all that much anyway, so yeah. I can keep him.
Yeah, I think it must be because she, you know, apparently would have more credibility from her because she's a parent, and it's established, you know, in the first episode of the series that Jean-Luc Picard is uncomfortable around children. So if he's saying, you know, you all knew the risks, everyone, I mean, actually that would be more interesting because then it would be like, oh, he just hates kids and he wants them off the ship, and that exactly. would be a credible character move on his part. But he's saying it is like, okay, you're apparently like really, really good at just sort of closing off that part of your brain that's a parent and following orders. And yes, that is interesting, but it just doesn't add up.
It's strange, yes. But so apparently there's this planet called yes. Aldea, because it's Spanish for town or something like that.
Yes.
And this is like Atlantis or like Brigadoon. It appears and disappears, not particularly randomly, but it's hard to find. And they have been lured here somehow. They're following. It's really unclear. It doesn't really. This episode doesn't really care about how they get there. It's just they're there.
Yep.
And that's it.
There's a breadcrumb trail. And exactly. I think they basically say those words.
So, yes, it is implied that the Aldeans have lured the Enterprise here to steal their children. Spoilers. They get, you know, a hail from the planet, and it's a lady. And she says, hey, I got this guy, Radu, and he's our leader. We should, you know. We'd like to talk to you. And I did find it funny when Captain Picard is like, oh, yes, we should talk. And they're like, okay, we'll be right there. And they appear on the bridge. I did enjoy
flowers.
That.
With flowers.
With flowers and like a cornucopia thing.
Yes. Oh, my God, the cornucopia. and they're just sort of, Picard takes it and he just sort of hands it to Riker. And it's the most awkward thing. Yeah. And it's just sort of beautifully awkward, though, because you can't hold one of those without looking like a giant dork.
No. And then Riker has to, like, put it down on the wooden shelf thingy on the bridge. It's very funny. It's a gesture of goodwill. They're like, yes, here's some flowers from our... And Dr. Crusher also seems, once again, kind of a stickler. She's like, they were not decontaminated, Captain. And Captain Picard's like, oh, our doctor's concerned that you're going to kill us with your germs, but it'll be fine.
She sort of voices the objection and everyone sort of waves it off, which I think is pretty funny. But also, it took me a good 15 minutes to realize that what's his name? The
Radu
is Deep Throat from the X-Files.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And I mean, everything else too. Jerry Hardin and I mean, he was in every TV show going back to like the beginning of TV shows.
And he played Mark Twain in subsequent episodes of Next Generation.
Yes. And I think he was on Voyager at some point too.
He's on everything.
He is very much in everything.
Yeah, he's one of those that guy guys. Oh, it's that guy.
Exactly. Oh, it's that guy. And the woman who plays, what's her name? I've got it all here.
Rochella.
I was like, is that Debbie Gibson? Which might have just been the hair. But there was a whole lot of 80s hair in this episode.
Oh, yes.
Very 80s hair. And she's wearing sort of like the flip in the front. And the rest of her hair is, you know, like the flip bangs, and the rest of her hair is pulled over to a side braid. And that is exactly the hairstyle that I wore all through Jewish summer camp when I was in eighth grade, which I think is about when this, like within a year of when this aired. So I wonder if did I steal it from her or did she steal it from me?
Oh, it might have been just part of the zeitgeist. Sometimes you feel like, I feel like sometimes all of a sudden you don't notice something and then suddenly everybody's hair looks one particular way for some reason.
Everyone's got the 80s side braid.
Exactly. Maybe it's coming back or it may already be back. I don't know. I'm out of touch. So who knows? Maybe the kids these days are doing that.
only hope. Well, they're all watching Friends, so they're all going to
Rachel. Cut. Yes. Yes. Yeah, so the Aldeans, they've been cut off from the rest of the world, not the rest of the world, the rest of the galaxy, by their own choice, right? They are far advanced. They kind of hang out their hermetic life. We find out very quickly that they have this thing called the Custodian that looks after all of the, you know, the unglamorous parts of life and lets them do whatever it is they want to do with their lives, which basically sounds like the Federation, which is one of the things that it never is really explored in Star Trek, but nobody has to work at the Federation either. So I don't understand how the society works, but anyway, it doesn't matter. This society has a computer, so at least that makes sense that it's running everything, and they are all like artists and musicians and scientists and what have you. Although apparently pretty crappy scientists, but
yeah.
And so they don't have great social skills because, you know, they just talk to each other. So Captain Picard is very excited. So one of the things I like about this is, you know, as we continue in The Next Generation, we find out that Captain Picard is big into archaeology and this kind of thing. So he's super excited. They appear on the bridge and then they leave and he's like, oh, how exciting for them to step out of legend and be on the bridge. And everybody's like, whatever, Captain Picard.
Riker gets really into it too. When Picard is sort of teasing him with, oh, look where we are, look what we found, he gets this big grin on his face and he's like this, he looks like this big kid and his eyes get really wide and it's very adorable. It's especially since this is first season fresh-faced Riker, so he looks even more like an overgrown adolescent.
And we quickly find out, so the Aldeans are like, oh, sorry, we didn't mean to come on board without being invited. You should bring some people down. And Captain Picard's like, we totally should. And the Aldeans say, great, we'll take three people. So they take Riker, Deanna Troi, and Crusher, and bring them down to Aldea, which seems kind of rude, but Captain Picard is totally cool with it for some reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's very weird. You would feel like he would just say, hey,
Please ask.
Yeah, exactly. But he just kind of smiles and says, oh, I guess they knew who they wanted.
Yep.
And this is where we very quickly find out the Aldeans are like, listen, we've got lots of knowledge that we can give you. We just want a small thing in return that I'm sure, you know, it's not going to be a big deal. I mean, I'm embarrassed even to ask, but we want your children.
And in payment, we will give you information.
That's right. The most delicious of commodities.
Yes.
And Riker's like, no way, dude. And Deanna Troi, in a very strange moment, I feel like, says, you know, humans are very, unlike other species, humans are attached to their children.
Unusually attached to their offspring. And I had that feeling, too, of like, wait, so what? Like, are other species not? Like, the kids just sort of wander off? And because it sort of puts a different spin on it of like, okay, if this is supposed to be a reasonable offer, then okay. But, you know, are we being just, you know, very, very humanish in saying, no, I kind of love my kid and I don't want to give him up to be like, you know, some random breeding slave or something?
And should they just wait for... And you would think the Aldeans clearly have done their research. They know everybody's names. They've scanned the ship. You would think that they would just then say, okay, we'll wait for another species that will give this to their children with no fight. Yeah. What's the problem? I don't really get it. I don't really understand the whole thesis of this episode either of why they need children. Why wouldn't they... Couldn't they also just as easily ask for volunteers, like adult volunteers, to come down perhaps with their families or with each other and then reproduce on their planet?
Procreate?
Yes.
Yeah. Instead of taking, I think, what was it, seven? It's six kids in Wesley. So yes. Seven kids. At least they've got a reasonable male to female ratio. But the rest of it's like, okay, what you're going to do? You're just going to wait?
Wait, yeah, it's weird.
You're going to make them breed? What are you breeding with them? This is getting really dark really fast. Like, yes. How does this work now?
And I feel bad. So they scan the ship once, and then they do a special child scan, and they scan each child on the Enterprise. But they don't take all the children.
Yeah.
And so I feel badly for the children that were rejected.
Well, you're just not creative enough. Apparently, you don't have enough of a genius mind.
I guess maybe that's what.
Yeah.
they took the good ones, and the rest of them are like, well, these are duds, so you can keep them.
This one's defective.
We don't want the ones that aren't going to be good artists, because apparently the scan tells them, we don't know what it tells them, but apparently it tells them what the aptitudes of each of these children are, because they seem to think that one particular child, Harry, right, it's Harry, who bumps into Riker in the beginning, is going to be a fantastic artist, even though he's never really been interested in art. And then another girl is going to be a fantastic musician, even though, well, they don't say if she ever had any interest in music or not. But
she did, because when she is kidnapped away, she's shown playing the harp.
Oh, that's right. Like,
and it, in this sort of hilarious bad effect, she's like playing this little harp, and there's it like freezes as she disappears, and then
her
there's like this
over.
String that takes the harp to the side as if like it's being like it was clearly supposed to be like falling to the ground in her absence, but it looks like it just
got knocked over.
Yeah, like it got harpooned and sort of shot off.
Yes, and the most impressive special effect in that scene is her mother's hair, because good Lord. She's got quite the hairdo.
That tease, that 80s like curly tease with the giant bangs, and you know that like half of a can of aerosol hairspray went into that, and oh, it just brings back memories. Well, there's the one I just want to shout out, the adorable Moppet, whose special genetic trait or skill or whatever must be just like charming the pants off anyone.
Oh, she's so cute.
She's Alexandra, and apparently she's played by twins, because of course he had to be played by twins. And she's, every time she came on screen, I was just like, oh my god. she's like the perfect little Moppet. She just has this grin.
And she has two. So they steal the children plus Wesley, who I suppose is a child technically, and technically, and they are, you know, they don't have children, because we find out later, because radiation sickness, and so they're all messed up, and Dr. Crusher fixes it, it's all fine. So they say, well, you know, we've assigned you to units, because we live in units, and people who have like skills live together, so we did our, you know, magical scan, so we now know what your skills are, so you're assigned to your unit. Except for Alexandra, because she, Rochella, whatever her name is, is charmed by her cuteness and basically says, I'm not giving her up. Even though, you know, that does not then make them think, gee, maybe the parents of these children are also attached to them, which would have made this episode a little more interesting if she had that realization, but she does not.
Yeah, it was an odd choice, because it doesn't really seem to go anywhere. It's interesting, because I guess what it does is it makes Rochella a little more sympathetic as a character, but they don't really do anything with it.
And it's not like she does like anything. Like, she doesn't petition to Radu that maybe we should work with them and they can help us. And she doesn't,
or she doesn't like threaten violence if she can't have the girl or something.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah, they're all very, very placid kidnappers.
They are. And so Wesley doesn't get assigned to a unit, but he gets assigned to an older lady who basically walks around with him. and she's like, hey, Wesley, would you like to see the supercomputer that controls our lives? And to which he says yes, because if someone asks you that question, you say yes. And he has a bunch of questions about the custodian. And she says, I don't know any of these answers. Why don't you ask the custodian? And I thought, well, that makes sense. And then he does not ask the custodian any of the questions he had.
Yeah.
Which I thought was
weird.
He
asked the question, like, I don't even remember what he asks.
He asks, how does it work? What is the power? What's behind that door? And they don't have any of these answers. And then she's like, Wesley, you have so many questions I don't have the answers to, but the custodian will have the answers. Why don't you ask the custodian? And he says, oh, all right. Hey, custodian, show me where the kids are. And I was like, that was not any of your questions. Why? Yeah. What are you doing, Wesley? Sheesh.
Yeah.
And he never asked the custodian any relevant questions. I mean, it's nice that he's concerned about the other children. I understand that, but I feel like it was a missed opportunity. He could have learned a little bit more about what's going on this planet, but he does not.
At one point, she says that the custodian was built by the janitors, and I thought that was I wanted to know more about that. Like, why would you have?
I think it's the progenitors.
Oh, progenitors! Oh. boo.
Although it would be much better if it were the janitors.
I know, because I'm like, I'm imagining like the capital letters, you know, and then mm-hmm. so who were the janitors and what were they cleaning?
not a lot happens in this episode. So Captain Picard is like, no, you can't keep the children. So let's go back down and negotiate with you. But really, we're not negotiating. We're trying to hatch a plan to get the children back because we know you're not going to give them back. And in like the world's worst palming episode, Beverly Crusher tries to slyly hand Wesley a medical tricorder and he hands it back and like super obvious.
It is the worst pantomime ever. He's like waving it around behind this woman's head and she's just sort of blankly staring off into the opposite corner and not noticing because apparently she's also blind. And it's again that feeling of theater of like this is not meant to be taken literally.
Mm-hmm. I do like the idea that this fabulously advanced civilization has so entrusted their technology that they have basically forgotten how everything works and they've just been living their lives. And now they're encountered this major problem that they can't reproduce. And their first thought is, well, there's nothing wrong with us because we have great technology. And if there was something wrong with us, we would know because we're smart. So we have to get some children from a random passing spaceship. I kind of like that idea. But the execution of this episode kind of lets me down.
Oh my goodness. What's the Coen Brothers movie with the kidnapping of
Raising Arizona?
Raising Arizona. It's basically Raising Arizona in space, except it's meant to be taken seriously.
It's meant to be taken very seriously.
Yes.
Despite the music.
Oh, the music. The music is I'd forgotten at the very beginning there's like that shimmery noise when Counselor Troy senses something.
Mm-hmm.
And did they do that regularly through the first season?
I think so.
Okay.
It's to show you she has mental powers.
Yeah. I would say it's got to go, but I know it did go. So it's just, ugh.
It's
music,
no
good. The music of the whole thing is very shimmery and sort of weird and sort of jaunty in places where it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And
it's very strange. And all the while they're trying to figure out, so there's a shield around this planet, which is why they can't beam up the kids. So they're trying to figure out how to get through. They do. They beam down, Riker and Data to fiddle around with the custodian. Meanwhile, Wesley has gathered all the children and he's like, we are going to do some tried and true methods of getting we're going to do a hunger strike, kids. And the kids are like, I don't really understand what you're talking about, but they do it. He tells them, don't talk to any Eldeans and don't eat anything. So that even though they're nice, we want to go home to our families, which I understand. I kind of wanted at least one kid to be like, I'd rather stay here, but
yeah, I'd rather eat lunch. Like exactly. Getting kids not to eat is really difficult. It's true. And they've got that whole plate of food in front of them and none of the kids are reaching for it. And I'm like, these are not children.
Well, these are Starfleet children. They are highly regimented.
Oh, my God.
And Captain Picard comes to see them. And in what is probably my favorite scene in this episode, Alexandra, who is the cutest kid by far, is happy to see Captain Picard, and she holds out her arms because she wants Captain Picard to hug her, and he really does not want to.
Mm-hmm.
But he does. But I just, that was very funny, I thought. Because we know Captain Picard doesn't like kids, but he doesn't want to leave them there.
And he's not a monster. No. He just doesn't like the kids.
He wants, some personal space. He also, he's on record as not wanting children on the bridge, which is funny at the end when Wesley comes on with Alexandra and he's like, Wesley, what the heck are you doing on the bridge?
Wesley!
Exactly. I love that moment too. And this is when, you know, Captain Picard and Dr. Crusher say, hey, Aldeans, guess what? It's your shield, your own technology has been destroying your bodies all along. So you should not use it anymore, and we will solve your problem for you by, I don't know, some sort of medical treatment that is not explained, but it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And the Aldeans are like, oh, okay. They beam the children back up, and Wesley comes on the bridge with Alexandra. Captain Picard yells at him. Alexandra hugs Captain Picard and sticks a triple on his back. very strange. That's the end of the episode.
Yeah, and everyone has the giggle at the end.
Yes, there's a Tribble.
Because of the stuffed Tribble that's stuck to Picard's shirt. And that's it. That's the episode.
and we never hear of the Aldeans ever again.
Oh, man.
Which makes me assume they all just died off because the medical treatment didn't work.
Or they'd sort of forgotten how to procreate. Or
apparently in the news, this is ripped from the headlines, people are having less and less sex and nobody knows why. So this could be the future that we see in front of us.
I oh, Lord. Okay. I don't want it to be, because that would be really, really dumb.
Yes.
Because everyone on that planet is just dumb.
They are very dumb.
And it's sort of, I mean, God, I feel so bad saying this, but it's so boring to
yes.
watch me. It's boring to watch amoral people be really dumb, because it's like, okay, could you at least be bad well instead of bad badly?
You're
kidnapping 6 kids and you're going to make them reproduce your entire species. You don't just beam all the kids from the Enterprise off the Enterprise and then disintegrate the Enterprise, which you clearly could do.
Totally could have, yeah.
And they let the kids talk to each other, which is, you know,
not good.
Sort of, you know, kidnapping 101, you know. No, you isolate them and you get them to rely on you. And yeah, it's all just sort of a pile of, well, that's that then.
And also, I don't understand why it had to be children. I could understand why they didn't want older people, right? Because you want breeding stock, basically.
Yeah.
But there are a whole bunch of young people on the Enterprise as well that they could have taken.
And you wouldn't have to wait for, like, puberty.
It's true. The Aldeans really have to rethink their methods here. They're not very good kidnappers. They haven't thought this plan out. The custodian, they should have consulted the custodian.
Yeah. What the custodian would have sort of said, I don't know, just I like the idea of the custodian being like seriously amoral and telling them to do this. And they're just sort of, oh, the custodian told us to get 6 kids and
that's
and,
true.
And,
they don't that's
and
not
a smart aleck who has a rainbow on his shirt and none of the kids, like, they're there for at least like 4 or 5 days, because the Enterprise at one point is gone for 3 days because they get kicked out into the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And have to come back at warp 9. And all the kids are wearing the same clothes. They must be really ripe.
Yes. And I do like that there are scenes of the kids seemingly enjoying themselves. So I get that, because the Aldeans, despite the fact that they are, you know, they're kidnappers, they're not particularly bad. They're inept and they seem to want the children to like them, but they aren't and maybe they're morally questionable, but they're not like torturing the kids. They're letting them carve wood and do all kinds. So it's nice to see the kids having fun, but they still want to go home and go back to calculus. I guess.
Which or not.
Harry, the young kid we see in the beginning going to calculus class. He doesn't want to go to calculus class. And at the end, he's like, oh, the Aldeans told me I'm going to be a great artist, so I don't have to go to calculus anymore. And his father says, no, you have to go to – he says, Harry, you can be whatever you want to be, but you have to go to calculus class. To which Harry says, okay.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't think that's how that would go.
And you get the sense that, like, the parents sort of hugged the kids and then everything was okay. And
it is kind of a traumatic experience, you would think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there are no traumatic experiences here.
No, it's true. I mean, you can get assimilated by the Borg and you're fine the next episode. So.
Yeah.
So, Helene, I think I know the answer to this question, but overall, what did you think of this episode of The Next Generation?
It was a very puzzling artifact of late 80s serious sci-fi television.
Mm-hmm.
And it does feel like it's trying to be an episode of the original series, in that we are going to, you know, we are going to take an idea and we're going to just sort of look at the idea for a while. But they couldn't really find the idea, because nothing adds up. Nothing makes sense. There's, you know, any number of better plans that would work and that would create more moral peril for everyone than you know, this sort of, we're just going to talk your ear off until we figure out a way to slip through your shields and grab our kids back. I liked the idea of Wesley leading this passive resistance. And what's funny is when you look up the episode in like either Memory Alpha or on Wikipedia or any, you know, sort of digest of, you know, seasons and episodes, it's Wesley must get the, when a bunch of kids are kidnapped off the Enterprise, Wesley must lead them and teach them passive resistance in order to something. And the passive resistance, basically, it's like, well, all we see is there's like, at one point he tells them not to eat lunch. That's basically the passive resistance. And yeah. It's like, there's about 1/15 of several interesting ideas in this episode that mm-hmm. just never connect to each other and result in a lot of standing around and talking and, you know, angry glares at each other. And it's all very, very bloodless and refined in that very strange pantomime sort of way. So it was sort of like being in an alternate reality for, you know, a good 45 minutes or so.
Well, I guess that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, could be a good thing if it made more sense.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. And I will say I agree with you 100%. And the other thing is I feel like I never felt like the children were in peril particularly.
Yes. Yep.
Which, you know, you don't want kids to be in peril, but if you're setting this up.
Yeah.
A little peril would have made it a little interesting.
Yes. And I think maybe that's part of it, is they were sort of bound by their own strictures in, you really don't want to show the kids in peril, because then it does sort of bring up all of these very terrible ideas of what are these people doing with their kids out in the middle of deep space anyway,
mm-hmm.
or just people didn't show that back on television. I'm thinking about, you know, I'm trying to think of like other shows of the time and how formulaic they were. And the worst you would do would be to show like a kid who was like in a little bit of danger and then they get saved
immediately.
And then like the bad person slips into the danger and dies. And that's good because they were the bad person.
Right, they deserve it.
Okay. They deserved it. And that isn't, you know, that, and so the thesis of the show is sort of going up against that. And you have to sort of pretend that there is peril, but there isn't. And so it all gets very defanged.
Mm-hmm.
And then doesn't seem to mean much of anything. And and I guess that's what I mean by, you know, it just felt like it was in an alternate dimension. It was like everyone was slightly drugged in this episode.
It's true. And Worf doesn't look right, because he's first season Worf and he just doesn't look right.
Oh, God. First season Worf is just the worst. And he gets, it's like he doesn't look right. It's like his face is all crumply and he doesn't have, like, he doesn't get to say anything.
No, he looks a little angry.
Things. And Yar only gets to say like one or two things. And I liked Yar and I wish she hadn't gone away.
She was a good character.
And I do like to see Yar. Also, something you said earlier about how if season one Star Trek original series hadn't been so good, there would have been no more Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Star Trek Next Generation first season had not had Patrick Stewart, there would be no more Star Trek Next Generation. He is the thing that keeps the show together.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly he is the thing that shows he's like the element that drives the show forward, that when he gets angry, you see it when he gets, and you feel it when you just see everything the man does, every emotion that crosses his face, every, you know, option that he's thinking of, you see it. You see him make decisions. Just the acting skill. His acting skill is just immense, and the show is just on his shoulders so clearly. And I remember thinking that, like, back from an encounter at Farpoint when I saw it. I guess it was last year. It was like, wow, he was just amazing out of the gate. And they were so lucky to have him.
They were very lucky, despite Gene Roddenberry not wanting to have a bald captain.
Oh, Roddenberry.
Oh, Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, Gene.
But the thing that saves this podcast is that I got to talk to you, Helene. That's, you are the Patrick Stewart of this podcast.
Oh.
So thank you. Thank you for joining me and talking about this weird episode of The Next Generation.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.